You're listening to an encore performance of The Jim Engster Show, so please hold your calls.
This is Jim Engster. Coming today on the show, we will talk with Vincent Bruno. He is a longtime Republican politico in the great city of New Orleans, and is no fan of Jim Letton, the U.S. attorney who just stepped down under pressure. We'll talk with Vincent Bruno about that, and also about Vincent's early association with none other than mafia kingpin Carlos Marcello. And Polite Stewart, a child prodigy who entered the gates of Southern University at the age of 14. He's graduating as a teenager. We will discuss with him an amazing academic voyage through his teen years on the bluff. Polite Stewart, quite a man, and he is back for an encore appearance. We talked with him a few years ago when he first entered Southern. All this, but first the news on 89.3 WRKF.
You're listening to an encore performance of The Jim Engster Show, so please hold your calls.
This is Jim Engster. Good morning, and welcome to the show. Richard Fisher is producing today. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, your number is 877-217-5757. You may reach us via email, engstershow@wrkf.org. Today is the 12th day of December 2012, 12-12-12, and our guest is one of the most fascinating people in Louisiana politics or any other venue in our state's long and storied history, Mr. Vincent Bruno. Good morning to you, Vincent.
Well, good morning, Jim.
And appropriate that I talk to a man whose last name ends in a vowel on what would have been the 97th birthday of Francis Albert Sinatra.
Well, unfortunately, I'm not quite as talented as he was.
I don't think any of us were quite as talented as Frank Sinatra. But he was a complex man, as some say that you are, and we'll get to a few items in Vincent's most interesting life. And he's been with us a few times, and I did want to talk with him, first of all, about the resignation of Jim Letton as a U.S. attorney in New Orleans, the only Republican prosecutor in the land. Presidents of the United States choose members of their own party to be prosecutors, Barack Obama, for example, through the assistance of Louisiana advisors, chose Don Cashew, a Democrat, to be the prosecutor here in Baton Rouge. But Jim Letton, the longest-serving prosecutor on the federal level in the United States, 12 years, is out in New Orleans after an email scandal involving a couple of his aides. Now, today, the Baton Rouge Advocate, in its opinion page, "A good job from Letton," reads the headline. "For his performance as a corruption-busting prosecutor, Jim Letton leaves his high-profile job as U.S. attorney with the plaudits of his boss, U.S. Attorney General Eric Holder, and bouquets from grateful citizens in Louisiana." Are you one of those grateful citizens, Vincent Bruno?
No, I'm afraid not, Jim, since I guess we'll get right to the point. I was indicted and convicted in 1986, and
now what did Jim Letton have? What did Letton have to do with that?
He was the prosecuting attorney. He was under John Vose at the time, and he had my attorney tape record me. And when they found out I was innocent, they prosecuted me anyway and sent me to jail. And I have to tell you, I did cry out to God, and he answered me verbally. Unbelievable. Thank you, Lord. And he said, I will deliver you. Well, Jim, you're talking, pardon me, I get a little emotional when I think about it, but you're talking to the only person in the state of Louisiana that has a federal expungement. It's unheard of.
And why was
it's
your...
Because
why,
with
why
Jim
was your,
Letton...
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, why
it's
was
because
it
of what Jim Letton and other prosecutors did. It sparked a congressional investigation, and it uncovered wrongdoing by the U.S. Attorney's Office. Mr. Vose was forced to resign. That was all kept hush hush, and Letton was promoted to U.S. Attorney. It's a sad state that you have. A man that's sworn to uphold the laws of the United States and protect your rights and my rights, and you have that office going and releasing confidential secret 5-day grand jury information, violating the laws themselves. And, you know, they take an oath of office to protect your rights and my rights, and they violate those those very laws, and they're applauded by the news media. I don't know quite what to say.
Well, that's been 26 years since you were convicted. Why wasn't Letton punished then if he did something as nefarious as you imply?
Why isn't he being punished now? He's forced to resign.
Well, why wasn't he punished during the last 26 years?
Because unfortunately, Jim, and I'll speak very forthright, you have a corrupt system here in the city of New Orleans, at least the federal prosecutors. They're violating people's rights, and that's happening today. You had Jan Mann and the Paracone going on the Internet, again, releasing secret 5A grand jury information to the public. They're committing felonies themselves. They should be indicted. But what do they get? An administrative hearing.
Well, they probably should be indicted. You're right. I don't know why they wouldn't be for doing exactly what you said, and there's very little doubt that that is what happened. Now, I do notice that one of those praising Mr. Letton, and it is noted in the Advocate editorial, praising him with glowing terms, is U.S. Senator David Vitter, saying of Letton, his work has really turned the tide against public corruption in Louisiana. Your thoughts, Vincent?
Well, as treasurer of the Republican Party here in Jefferson Parish, and an elected member of the executive committee for over 20 years, and I'm not a big fan of David Vitter's, but I have to say, I guess he should applaud him. David Vitter was on the Canal Street Madams list, and Jim Letton kept that list secret to the praise of both Democrats and Republicans. And that's why you see all this support from both parties. He does the things he needs to do to keep himself politically connected to both sides.
He had access to that. Hold on. He had access, Letton did, to that list of customers to the New Orleans Madam?
Of course. The list was in the hands of the U.S. Attorney's Office, and it kept it secret. I know you didn't keep those tabs on it like we did here in New Orleans, but, of course, they had a list there, and it was not made public.
Yeah, I remember similar things have happened in Baton Rouge, and all you had to do was go down to the federal courthouse, and as our reporters did, and look at the list, and there were some prominent names on that list. Sylvia Landry was the prostitute in question here. But you're saying that Jim Letton kept that secret?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
And why would he do
that?
Why
wasn't it made public?
Yeah, why not?
Oh, by the way, do you know who went, you know who got convicted on that whole scandal? The boat. You remember that? The boat got convicted.
Okay.
I mean, what a mockery of justice.
Well, you're implying that Jim Letton was protecting public officials.
I am implying that. I'm making that statement. He protected the high-ranking public officials in this area. If you recall, they had a lot of prominent names, they didn't name them, that were on that Canal Street Madam's list. It was kept secret.
You're saying Democrats and Republicans?
Oh, absolutely.
Well, absolutely. Would Senator Vitter's name have been on that list?
Well, how short your memory is, Jim. The Canal Street Madam said he was. He was caught with another list, I believe it was up in New York. You had the a local prostitute, Cortez was her last name, made a sworn statement that she would visit or service, I'd say, Mr. Vitter on Tuesdays and Thursdays at Dauphine and Dumain.
But this is a prostitute. Now, can we take her word over an esteemed U.S. senator?
Well, didn't he get up and said, I have sinned? Didn't he admit to it?
He said he had done damage to his marriage, but he didn't acknowledge. In fact, he denied. In fact, Vincent, he denied the New Orleans allegations. He admitted to doing things wrong in Washington, D.C., but not in New Orleans.
No, we got to listen closely to what he said. He said he did not go to the Canal Street brothel. That is a true statement. He had takeout service.
Well... So you're.
And if you recall, okay. I accused him of that while I was on a radio show. In fact, I think I was on your show. And Ned from Metairie called in and said that I was a liar. And if you recall, he said, I said, well, what did I lie about? He said, you've been going on radio and saying Senator Vitter had an affair. I said, no, I have not. He said, well, you're lying. I said, well, you're accusing me of lying for something I didn't do, and I'm going to do it. And that's when I made the accusation on your show. It was a statewide show, Jim.
Right. Now.
And recall, if you let me finish on this, the next day, Senator Vitter went on Jeff Corrad's show and called me a thug and a liar.
And you threatened to sue him. You threatened to sue him, but you did not. Why did you not sue him?
Okay. In Louisiana, when someone defames you, when you win, the judge orders them to make a public apology. What he did, and he remember, he's a lawyer, so I said, I will sue him Monday morning. Well, I had a hand-delivered apology letter delivered to my home apologizing for him making that statement, and he went on the same radio show and apologized. I had no basis then to go into court.
So you're saying
if you recall, I made the statement, Senator, I will put you under oath, and if you say under oath that you did not have these affairs, then I will publicly apologize to you and support you for any position you ever run for.
All right, so he did apologize to you.
Handwritten apology. I'll send you a copy.
Okay. So you have
hand-delivered, rather. I'm sorry.
what did the apology say?
I see if you bear with me while we talk, and I'll try to. I should have had all this ready, but I'll try to pull it up on my computer. But I just basically said I apologize that I used bad judgment and that he was sorry
for calling you a thug
and a liar.
Now, Vincent Bruno, before we go to any phone calls, you, of course, spent many years on the police department in New Orleans. Are you using information that you had as a police officer to make any of these other allegations you're stating on this show?
No, not at all. That was, that's been 30 years ago, Jim. Now, the information we received on Mr. Vitter was when we were involved in a campaign. I was in a Dave Treen campaign, and they were running against each other, and Ms. Cortez came into the office.
Okay.
And then we thoroughly checked her out, and I have to say, to Dave Treen's credit, he said, I don't want to use that. And we disagreed, John Treen, his brother, and myself, because I believe the public should know everything about a person who's running for office. We all commit sins, Jim. We all do things that are wrong. What you do is you admit it, and you repent and change course. But to conceal it, I think, is a mistake because it's going to come out. The truth will come out in the end.
All right. Peggy says she is appalled that a Republican leader such as yourself is lashing out at your fellow GOP brother, David Bruce Vitter.
Well, that she's putting party over principle. And that's the problem. When this all came up, David should have did the same thing Bob Livingston did. Step down. Okay, be really rehabilitated, and then come back and run again. That's what should have happened. But with the party leaders, and unfortunately, I was one of them at the time, and I still am. But I was on the state level. We don't want to force him to resign because Blanco will appoint a Democrat. Well, when you start putting party politics over principle, that's where you run into trouble, and that's why I think this nation is in trouble. What I look up in Washington and see is we want to win, and that's the attitude. We need to put the people first, not our party, not our politics.
When's the last time you talked to the senator?
About a month or so ago. He was very, very cordial. Look, personally, I do not dislike David Vitter. I feel for him, and sometimes I want to just take him and hug him and say, David, you know, straighten up. You know, he's got a lot of potential.
He says he has straightened up.
Well, okay, if you say so. And
I'm taking the man at his word.
Yeah, well, you have to do that until... So he does something otherwise. But, Jim, I'm in it, sort of in the inside, so I know a few things that you don't.
We'll be back with Vincent Bruno in 1 minute.
You're listening to an encore performance of The Jim Engster Show, so please hold your calls.
This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Engster Show at WRKF.org works via the World Wide Web. Vincent Bruno is a guest for another segment. Longtime Louisiana Politico Republican and with a fascinating background, and he is one who is not pleased with his fellow Republicans, Jim Letton and David Vitter. He says that Letton's resignation as the U.S. attorney in New Orleans is overdue, and that Letton, in Vincent Bruno's estimation, protected both Democrats and Republicans who had their names on the New Orleans Madams list, and that list has not been made public. Scott in St. Francisville. Scott, you're on the air with Vincent Bruno.
Hey, Vincent. We were in high school together, on NOPD together, and I'm a Democrat. But, Jim, you mentioned that be able to check the veracity of the Canal Street madams. I saw the interview on television where they mentioned that Vitter's specialty was getting dressed up in diapers.
Well, all right. Let's not go there. I know that was said, but... and you're laughing about it, but what does that have to do with what we're talking about?
I'm not laughing about it. That's Vincent, I'm afraid. The interview could be checked with a psychological stress evaluator, which is a voice-activated lie detector, which Clyde Vadreen failed. Gerald Ford didn't pass very well. O.J. Simpson failed miserably. But all of that could be checked out with putting new voices on the machine. Very easy to do.
All right.
You had the equipment.
So was that done? Was that done?
Not that I'm aware of. I haven't heard any reports
okay.
about it.
All right.
I keep my ear to the ground for those things, but not yet.
Okay. All right. Well, those allegations are several years old, and I think the senator deserves the benefit of the doubt from the previous allegations. And he did win re-election, by the way, by a landslide in Louisiana. But as we hit the break... Vincent, you said that you knew things that I don't know. What do you know?
Well, I'm not going to, been involved in the party politics. You find out a few things here and there. And I would rather not. I do not have those proven. And I'm not going to go out and look to prove anything on David Vitter. He's, for the most part, he's voted right. He's done pretty good. I'm just telling you, nobody's perfect. We all make mistakes, and there are a few things out there that disturb me. But I really don't want to go into them and make them public.
So
right
you have
now.
I'm not on a vendetta. No firsthand knowledge of any new allegations against Senator.
No, let me say that I do not have any firsthand knowledge of any new allegations, and I don't want to go into witch hunt on David Vitter. You know, he's been voting properly. I have to say that, and in my opinion, from what I've seen, you know, this far.
Would you like to see him be governor?
There are a few people I prefer, and I like the lieutenant governor, Jay Dardenne. I think he's a fine, fine man, and I'm not real close to him. I've met him two or three times, but I've been watching him. I think he's done an excellent job, and he's a decent family man and very capable.
Are there Republicans, Vincent, who say, look, just shut up? Because
all the time, Jim. And again, that's when you start putting politics and party over principle. And I think that's a big, big mistake when we do that. We need to do what's right.
297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757. Elwood in Atlanta. Hello, Elwood. You're on the air with Vincent Bruno.
Thank you very much, Jim, and I'd like to commend Vincent Bruno for putting principle over party, something this country is sadly, sadly lacking.
All right, Elwood, are you on a speakerphone? Because if you are, could you move to the handset? Elwood?
I'm on a speakerphone.
All right, go ahead.
Washington is sadly lacking putting party over principle right now, putting principle over party right now. And, Jim, if I may, as a person who played a major role in the outing of David Vitter, there's a phone call that I could give your audience a column to read where they can link on to the phone call that provoked David Vitter to call Vincent Bruno a thug and a liar, leading to Vitter's apology.
All right, very briefly, very briefly.
Okay, right. It's at righthandthief.com. blogspot.com, the May 22nd, 2010 column by David C. Bellinger. And this is David C. Bellinger in Atlanta, Georgia.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Of course, Elwood.
It's always good to hear from the flaming lib.
So. Now, Elwood is a man who has tormented the senator for many years, stalked him on shows like this. Whenever Senator Vitter appears, Elwood pops up, and that's why Senator Vitter doesn't do shows like this much anymore, Vincent. He is a worthy adversary, isn't he?
Yes, he is, and... again, I think we should be after truth. Again, in David Vitter's defense, we all make mistakes. And when we do, we need to just be man enough or woman enough to come forward and say, hey, I made a mistake, I won't do it again. And that's all, because we all make mistakes. If we say we don't, we're not being truthful.
Well, I have. Have you, Vincent?
I'm afraid I made a lot of them, probably more than you, Jim.
Mitchell and Glen Oaks. Mitchell, you're on the air with Vincent Bruno.
Good morning. How y'all doing?
Fine, Mitchell.
Fine.
All right. Mr. Bruno, I feel he's telling the truth, you know, about Vitter. You know, the truth gonna set us all free, first of all. And I he's a Republican, I'm a Democrat. And I understand his point. We got to take the principles over the politics. You know, if most of the Republicans realize that they need to go with the principles and tell a political affiliation with their party. If you're wrong, you're wrong. That's the stalemate that's happening right now in Washington, D.C. with the president. You know, we all voted for the tax to do the president what he, let him do what he want to do. Just give him a chance. And
all right. Well, Vincent, you're a Republican office holder, and I don't know how you get elected when you're attacking one of the two most prominent Republicans in the state of Louisiana. Are there other Republicans who think like you do?
Well, apparently the people in my area do, or they wouldn't elect me.
Well, that's also so, David Vitter's home base. You live not far from where he lives, do you?
Not too far. I don't go out every day and attack Republicans. When I'm asked a question, I give a truthful answer to the best of my ability. I told you I thought he's doing pretty good right now. And, there's something there that'll come out. The truth always comes out, Jim. It may take a little time, but it does come out. So, you know, he's been voting right, in my opinion. And you asked me if I would support him for governor. There are other people, like I mentioned, Jay Jordan and one or two others that I prefer. But, depending on who his opponent is, I could support David Vitter for governor.
Okay. Now, I noted going into the show that we're talking to one of the most fascinating people in Louisiana political history, at least recent history, and you made reference to your close association with David Treen, the former governor of Louisiana. You and I had occasion to meet Governor Treen, to meet with him one night when he met the lovely Jennifer Flowers. Do you recall that, Vincent?
Very vaguely, Jim. Please refresh my memory.
Well, anyway, Jennifer was very friendly with Governor Treen, but Governor Treen told Miss Flowers that he was a happily married man and he would not succumb to her charms the way other governors had. Now, also, you were very close Carlos Marcello. How close?
Very close. He was my uncle. And, of course, I saw him, frequently. And because of that, because I was a police officer, I used to be summoned to grand juries and asked me would I talk to Mr. Marcello about. And I said, well, he told me, always do the right thing. Don't get in trouble. Don't wind up like him. And, of course, the grand jury didn't believe that. And they said, what did you really talk about? I said, okay, we talked about robbing a bank, and at which time they threw me out the grand jury. But, he was a relative, and that's it. And people don't believe that, but that's what he told me. And if he found out that I was straying or doing anything improper, he'd call me in and say, hey, straighten up your act. And I used to point out when we go to grand juries, I said, do you see people killed in restaurants here like you see up in New York? You know, people wouldn't tolerate that down here. Carlos Marcello was immensely powerful and popular, but he went out helping people. And I can remember driving him down to Grand Isle, and we'd stop at LeBlanc's Bakery to get this wonderful French bread that they'd make in a ball. And they would call ahead and alert people that he was on his way down to Grand Isle, Jim, and people would stand alongside the road just to wave to him. Again, I'll point that out.
To wave to Uncle Carlos.
Sir?
To wave to Carlos Marcello.
Yeah, unfortunately not to me. But he helped a lot of people, and I will defend him. Did he do things wrong? Yes, he did. He was involved in gambling and some other things that maybe he shouldn't have been involved in. By the way, one of them was not drugs. You had better not mention drugs in front of him. You'd be in deep, deep trouble. He did some things wrong. Was he involved in the Kennedy assassination? Absolutely not.
Why do you say not?
Because I knew him, and I talked to him very intimately.
Was he sad when President Kennedy was killed?
Not at all. I mean, if you recall what they did him, they just hijacked him, kidnapped him, threw him on an airplane, and sent him down to Guatemala. He had $17 in his pocket. And, of course, he got back in, and the Supreme Court ultimately ruled that the government acted illegally. No, he wasn't fond of Robert Kennedy or Jack Kennedy, but he certainly was not involved in his assassination. And one thing I can point to on that is he was very close with Jim Garrison, and Jim Garrison led the Kennedy assassination investigation, if you recall, and the government blocked D.A. Garrison at the time. Well, if he was involved, I'm certainly, he being Carlos, was involved in that. He would have sent word to Jim Garrison, don't be investigating anything. And he didn't do that.
So you're telling me that, telling our audience that Carlos Marcello, the leader of organized crime in the New Orleans area, head of the Cosa Nostra, was very tight with the district attorney of Orleans Parish.
I'm saying very tight, very friendly, yeah. Of course, he was friendly with every elected official in the area, just about. He had an immense amount of money, and he could sway an election. So, yeah, everybody wanted to be friendly with him.
Well, and were they fearful of him?
I'll answer you this way. Show me one time that anybody made an allegation that he was roughed up Carlos Marcello or any of his employees or friends or associates. He just didn't operate that way, Jim.
You knew him when he was deported, right? When he went to Guatemala or was sent to Guatemala?
I was very young at the time. Yeah, but I did know him, of course.
Well, I'd heard that the next day he was in Miami, that it didn't take him long to get back to the United States.
No, it took a little longer than one day. I think it took about 2 weeks, if I recall. I was very young, but it took a little time to get back. They landed him in airstrip in a remote part of Guatemala that had to walk 17, 18, 19 miles to get to the nearest city. And he made arrangements and got back in. He did not tell me those arrangements, but he did get back into the country, and he was successful with the Supreme Court that it was an illegal, I call it a kidnapping. You just don't take somebody, an American citizen, and send them down to Guatemala not following the very laws you're supposed to be enforcing.
Now, the John Volz, the U.S. attorney that you don't like, the late John Volz, he got a conviction on Carlos Marcello and Charles Romer, the commissioner of administration for Edwin Edwards. That conviction was later overturned, but they both went to prison. What do you recall about that?
Well, I recall Sam Cariola, an organized crime figure from Buffalo, coming down to meet me and said he would introduce me to the next U.S. attorney from New Orleans. And I said, George Reese? George Reese will be here? And he said, no, John Volz. And I'm going, how do you from Buffalo know that John Votes will be the next U.S. attorney here in New Orleans when everybody, including Mr. Roussel and others, Senator J. Bennett Johnson, say it's going to be George Reese. And he said, Vincent, listen to an old man. John Votes will be your next U.S. attorney. And he said, he'll be here in a few minutes. Would you like to meet him? I said, yeah. And sure enough, a month or two later, John Votes was appointed. And we don't have time on this show, but that's what the federal investigation got into, how he was appointed, and it was done through organized crime figures out of Buffalo, mm-hmm. who are not nice people like they are down here.
When did you join the police force in New Orleans, Vincent?
October 24th, 1966.
You were a young man. You were, what, 18, something like that?
Yeah. 20.
Okay. And you're credited as the man who shut down Mardi Gras one year.
Yeah, man who stole Mardi Gras. Yes, I have that title.
How did you do that?
We had Mayor Morial got elected, and he was very antagonistic towards the police department. And made some rules and regulations and brought in the chief of police from Alabama, Jim Parsons, who was highly, highly unpopular. And that, of course, I was head of the police union panel, and we called the strike. And by the way, every policeman went out on strike with the exception of 11, including the three chiefs. So you had about 99.9% participation in that strike. So it has to tell you something's wrong.
I think that was 1978. What happened to Mardi Gras that year?
It was 1979. It was canceled.
They decided they couldn't protect the citizenry with 11 police officers.
I guess they made that determination in their wisdom. But by the way, it was the best Mardi Gras most policemen at the time tell me they ever had.
But there are people who hate you to this day for that.
Yes, there are.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mardi Gras will go on this year, and it'll be earlier than usual. We've got Super Bowl coming up in New Orleans. It should be quite a festive time in the city that you have patrolled for many years.
Well, yeah, it's going to go on in the Super Bowl and what have you. And, you know, New Orleans is a fun town, and everybody knows that. But getting back to the police strike, you know, you need the very best people possible in law enforcement. Police officers, law enforcement people have the power to take your freedom away. They can arrest you and take your freedom away. So you want well-paid, well-educated law enforcement people. At least that's my opinion. And you don't diminish the testing to get any group in, or for political reasons or any reason whatsoever. You need the very best quality people that you can possibly have to put in these positions, because it's important positions, and it deals with your very freedoms and rights, and I just feel very strongly on that.
Well, Vincent, it's always good to talk with you. Hope you have a great holiday, and thanks for your candor.
Well, thank you, and God bless you and your family.
Thank you, Vincent. See you soon. And we will return in 1 minute with Polite Stewart, child prodigy at Southern University. He entered college at the age of 14, and he is graduating as a teenager. We will talk with Polite Stewart after this 1 minute pause on WRKF.
You're listening to an encore performance of The Jim Inkster Show, so please hold your calls.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Richard Fisher is producing. 297-5633. Is your number. Polite Stewart is with us, a child prodigy who entered Southern University at 14. He's 18 years old, and Friday he will graduate at Southern University. Congratulations, Polite.
Thank you very much, sir.
And you were with us when you first enrolled. What's your major in?
Physics.
Physics. Tough curriculum. And you got out in 4 years. How was the experience when you were 14, 15, 16, 17, now 18 years old at Southern University?
It was really enjoyable. I mean, I had my good and bad times, but I really did enjoy my matriculation through Southern.
And go ahead.
And I look forward to heading to grad school from here.
What do you plan on doing in grad school?
Biophysical engineering.
And where will you go?
I have a bunch of things on the table right now. First, I'm going to be doing research at NC State, North Carolina State University. And right now I have a bunch of picks, but I guess top would be either Duke or Berkeley.
Well, you were in demand coming out of school. And when I say school, you were homeschooled, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you're 14 years old. I guess you took all the tests. You took the ACT, the SAT. You did well?
Yes, sir.
Recall your scores?
30 on the ACT, 1830 on the SAT.
All right. Not bad. 1830.
Yes, sir.
That's a very good SAT score and not a bad ACT score. So you could have gone to a lot of places.
Yes, sir.
And you chose Southern University.
Yes, sir.
And it's a university your family knows well.
Yes, sir.
How so?
Well, my mom has 3 degrees from there, and my dad has his degrees from there as well. So,
how did the student body react to you as a young man on campus?
They reacted favorably. I mean, most of them didn't even know that I was 14 when I came up there. Mm-hmm. And for the ones that did, it didn't make much of a difference because we were all just trying to get through the classes and do well.
All right. 297-5633 is your number. 877-217-5757. Polite Stewart is with us. Come Friday, he will graduate from Southern University at 18 years old with a degree in physics. And he has done exceptionally well, as we knew he would, at Southern University. It had to be a bit of a challenge, I would think, especially when you were 14 and most of the members of the student body were in their early 20s. Did you have friends who were close to you, who obviously would have been older than you?
Yes, sir. I did and still do. I mean, most of my closest friends now are from the people who I met on Southern's campus. Many of my physics colleagues and then the people who I met from biology, chemistry, English departments, all over the campus. That's really what makes up my connections right now.
What about extracurricular activities? What did you do in along those lines, being such a young person on campus?
Well, when I started out, I was working with a lot of different clubs on campus, the science clubs and such. And then from there, I started doing photography for the Southern Digest around my junior year. And I also founded the Southern University Martial Arts Club on campus.
Well, I can see you're in good shape, and you've blossomed into a stout young man, but when you went there, you were much smaller than you are now, right?
Yes, sir.
But at 14, what did you look like?
If I remember correctly, I looked a little chubby, and I was quite a bit shorter, and I wasn't that much in shape.
Did you date at all at Southern?
Yes, sir, I did.
Yeah? Older girls?
Yes.
Yeah? Well, I imagine you're a popular guy. You're very charismatic, smart, and a young man who's going places. What would you like to do?
Research in the future. The long-term goal is, first of all, to do research, to do well in the biophysical sector, and then from there, I hope to be able to get enough money to travel a lot, because I love traveling. I love learning new languages. I love meeting new people, so that's my goal.
You thought about getting into politics?
No, sir.
No? Not <it. laughs> His father is with him, Polite Stewart Sr. He's smiling, but you're 18 years old. People who are 18 usually change their minds every now and then. When you went in at 14, did you know you were going to go the distance with a physics major?
No, sir. I went in under biology when I first got there.
Yeah, so You've changed your mind a bit along the way, and you could do so again. And who knows, Polite Stewart might someday be running for governor. You're on a faster pace than Bobby Jindal was. He was Secretary of the Department of Health at 24 years old, and he went to Brown University. You could have gone to any of those Ivy League schools, I'm sure, and chose not to, but you say you may go to a school like that.
In the future,
in the future. The future being next year?
Yes, sir.
Yeah?
Yes.
Yeah? So you could end up having a PhD probably by the time you're 22 or so. So that would be quite an accomplishment. And you've already had a number of them. But how was the homeschooling experience? Who decided that? I suppose your parents.
Yes, sir. When I was, my parents started homeschooling me from the time of age 2 all the way up. And it was very enjoyable. It was my mom and my dad. And my dad taught me math, science, social studies, reading. My mom was big on English. And pretty much they did very well by me. Most of what you see sitting here today is the result of their hard work.
All right. I'll read a few emails that have come through. Deborah in Glen Oaks says, I'm a classmate of Polite Stewart in the physics department at Southern and want to congratulate him on his success. I've known Polite for 4 years, and sometimes I forget that he's so young and academically advanced, not just because he is young, but because he is so humble, well-rounded, and so emotionally grounded as a human being. I've met Polite's parents and know that they have done an excellent job in raising him. They did not take his education to chance, but instead intervened and took his education in their hands and homeschooled him. However, Polite does not have to be an exception to the rule if more parents would take an early and more active role in their child's education. His parents started early, as I have with my daughter, who is also a physics major at Southern, and my granddaughter, who is 2 years old. Public education is dumbing down the American population and is not effective in producing critical and free-thinking citizens, writes Deborah. In my opinion, public education is not an option if you're looking for a child like Polite. He is special, but so can any child succeed at his level if the right method of education is applied. Now, that's an indictment on public education that I think most of our audience would disagree with, but what are your thoughts about her statement as a whole?
Well, first, I would like to say hi to Sister Deborah, and I would actually, honestly, I would agree to a certain degree with her statement, because the thing is, public education takes you to a certain point. But unless there is a huge amount of focus being set on that student as a one-on-one individual, there's only a certain limit to which they can excel. Because generally you have students who, of course, normally excel in the class. You have the divisions in the classroom. You have the students who understand, the students who kind of get it, and then the students who don't understand. And the students who get it, that's fine. They're moving along at an okay pace. Everything's good. But for the ones who don't get it, or the ones that are trying to get it, you need something to help push them past the gaps that they have. Whenever you're learning something there, you generally have gaps in between what you learn and what you don't learn. So you need someone to help fill those in. And I know in my case, homeschooling did that very well, because the time that you put in, it's a one-on-one situation. Any questions you have can be immediately answered. So it allows you to gain information a lot faster. I mean, the same thing would be possible with public school, but you would have to put them through so many accelerated programs and specialties that...
But you went to a public university?
Yes, I did. I did go to a public university.
You know, there are some people who are homeschooled who never go to college.
This is true.
So if homeschooling is the panacea, why even go to college?
Well, I thought about online school, but... First of all, one, I wanted the degree as that next step, and then I also wanted the social factor. And at the same time, the education that I received specifically from Dr. Bagaoko, who's in the physics department, was definitely beneficial. It is very beneficial to what I'm planning to do. So, I mean, it's a boost, but at the same time, I will say that there were a lot of experiences that I had that negatively affected my education at Southern, but I had a bunch of positive ones as
well. What were the negative experiences?
The negatives would probably be just the student climate. You have the students who are really willing to succeed up there, which you have to find and connect with, but then at the same time, there's an en masse of students who don't want to really succeed. So you have to find that group. But at the same time, it was helpful because it gets me used to having to deal with real-life situations and how the world's going to work in the future.
All right, 297-5633 for Polite Stewart. You're listening to a poised, articulate young man, 18 years old, and we could probably talk all night, and he would not say you know one time. You speak much better than the public at large, people of any age. I'm sure people have noted that.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another Deborah writes, did the homeschooling and academic acceleration affect your relationship with your peers?
Yes, it did, especially before I got to college. Once I got to college, everything pretty much mellowed out. But before that, I had quite a few conflicts with my peers when it came to the summer programs that I went to. Because up until the time when I went into Garrett A. Morgan and CETA, those programs, which was around when I was 9 and 10, up until that point, I hadn't really had that much interaction with other people. When I went into those programs, I started having to deal with, of course, my peers who were 3 and 4 years older than me. And then things started to get a little complicated because at that point there were situations where, of course, I guess since I'm the youngest kid and I'm still on their level, it would become a whole situation where it's like, okay, I kind of feel displaced or out of place with this kid sitting here who's actually in the same class as me and everything. So it did get interesting.
How did you work through that?
I made friends with the people who were willing to make friends with me, and then other than that, I just trudged along.
Were there people who resented you for being such a child genius?
I would say they were. I mean, no one ever openly just said that to me, but yes, I could feel it.
Okay. 297-5633 for Polite Stewart. Donald in Dutchtown. Donald, good morning. You're on the air with Polite.
Good morning, sir. How you doing? How you doing, Felix?
Doing well, sir. And you?
I'm doing good. I was just listening to your message, and I want to commend you on your accomplishments and things like that. But unlike you, I did attend public schools in East Baton Rouge Parish. In fact, I attended majority African-American schools for 12 years, and I got a scholarship, and I went on to Louisiana Tech, and I majored in a profession that was not uncommon, but not frequented by a lot of African-Americans or international students. And it was a foreign land for me. But what I had brought in public schools and the social factor, I was able to achieve. And I do understand what you're saying when you go up to the university and you want to be studious and you're doing things, and there's a large faction, unfortunately, of students who are on the campus for purposes other than education. And there's a problem, and they've got to change that. But I'm glad that you found a professor that you could find a haven in. But there are students, and I have a lot of friends who come out of Southern in engineering and other technical programs that are doing well, who went there with your attitude. And you are right, the social factor is going to be necessary when you go to interview for jobs and things like that. You're not going to get that from online courses. Not that I'm saying online is not good, but social factor is really important when you start interviewing and looking for jobs, because you're going to have to be able to interact with people to be able to promote yourself.
Right. Would you respond? Thank you, Donald. He agreed with you for the most part, and his experience was different than yours. What will you do to celebrate Friday?
Well, on Friday after the graduation, there's, I guess you could say, quite a big celebration that's going on at 6 o'clock that my parents are hosting for me in the Southern University Union. And that's going to be like the main event.
Yeah. And you'll be the youngest graduate, I'm sure. You're graduating at a time when most young men of your age would be entering Southern University. And it is an amazing accomplishment. And I think you'll go a long way, whatever you decide to do, Polite. But it is also remarkable that you chose to stay here in Baton Rouge rather than venturing off. It might have been a bit difficult at 14 to go to Cambridge, Massachusetts, or New Haven, Connecticut. But some folks would have encouraged you to do that, and I'm sure your parents were elated that you decided to stay close to home. You listen to them, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, yeah. So it's an experience that is unique to you. It's one that most of us can't relate to because our college experience was in our very late teens and early 20s, And here you are, a teenager, and you're leaving Southern University. Are you going to miss it?
Yes. To a certain degree, yes. I was thinking about that, actually, yesterday when I was waiting for the Channel 2 interview. I was actually looking over the lake, and it was interesting because you start to have memories and everything flow back. It's like, yeah, there was the bad, but there was also a lot of good, and I really did enjoy my stay at Southern. Now, I am going to miss it to a certain degree, and definitely some of the people who I'm leaving behind.
What about professors? Any professors? Did they have a profound effect on you?
Yes, sir. Dr. Stephen McGuire, Dr. Dong Shin Guo, Dr. Dao Abagaoko, of course, Dr. Ella Kelly. It's a long list. It's a very long list. It's encompassing departments from physics, chemistry, biology professors, English, philosophy. It's a long list.
So you were impressed with the quality of the education you received?
Yes, sir.
At Southern University?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So when you were 14, I doubt that you were driving to campus.
No, sir.
No? When did you start doing that?
Well, I mean, I got my license about a year and a half ago, but I really didn't, because my dad needs the SUV. Well, my mom actually drives the SUV most of the time to work, but it can switch around, and then my dad uses the truck.
Well, you'll be driving to places that we'd love to see you go, and we'll follow your steps along the way. Thank you very much, and congratulations, Polite Stewart.
Thank you very much, sir.
And thank you for listening, everybody. Back tomorrow. Stay tuned. We'll be back tomorrow, and thanks to the Louisiana Farm Bureau Federation for sponsoring our program.